Hi, this is Nick Hood. Thanks for listening to this podcast. This week I'm thinking about cultural isolation, and I put a little tweet out earlier on that said, do teachers suffer cultural isolation in schools? And how long does it take to lose cultural references and become institutionalised? Rob McMillan picked that up and asked the question, how many teachers have that cultural isolation forced upon them by limiting managers who fear a knowledgeable staff? And I don't know if that's the whole picture, but Rob seems to be connecting cultural isolation with ignorance, which is reasonable within the constraints of Twitter. But what I was prompted by was the frustration expressed by teachers who, several weeks into the winter term, are yearning to escape at the weekend. Many do, stereotypically heading for the hills, or a book, or even the madness of a city. But whatever is different and liberating from the oppression that they feel within the school environment. So why do we feel this way in our working environment? Is it the prospect of being compared to the super efficient Miss Efficiency, who manages to do everything, plans, extracurricular, parents' forums, or whatever additional burden is forced by teachers in their day-to-day? Is it the condescension of the head teacher or education officer who seem to take the view that teachers are deficient and need to be encouraged constantly to improve? Is what they already do so poor that it is inadequate? The feeling is left, I think, particularly after local inspections and even in day-to-day conversation. There is an arrogance around some certain educators who, when they speak to the classroom teacher, seem to take the assumption that the classroom teacher knows nothing, is just down there at the bottom of the pile. And no surprise with that, of course, there's no place for teachers to go now, having removed the career path for principal teacher and head of department. Many schools in Scotland don't have that route anymore, and it's really difficult for anybody to come into teaching now and expect within 5 to 10 years to be promoted or head of department. There's almost now no other place to go apart from taking local promotions as PT1, looking after some scheme or other, to show that you're ready and able to take the next leap. And the next leap from classroom teacher in many places is the deputy job, and that's quite a different job from classroom teaching. So the career advancement in Scotland is massively limited. So it leaves a great gap between those who are promoted and those who are not. And this comes across in sometimes a patronising and arrogant attitude that some of our leaders have in speaking to classroom teachers, particularly about areas of improvement or the latest initiative or the current thing. Coping with this mindset, mindset's another example for you, it leaves the teacher with two choices. The teacher can either join in with this narrow culture of buzzwords and passive-aggressive bragging and point scoring, or you can just keep your head down, accept that you're not good enough, and seek escape out of school at the weekends. This is what many people do, of course. My suggestion is that you should bring your own culture, your principled ethos, keep connection with what I would consider to be normal, and your sense of what's right and good. Bring it into the school with you. You came into teaching with a great deal of background and experience and a cultural background, very often having had other careers first. And there is the sense that any of that prior experience, culture, worldly wiseness, a lot of that has no place in the mindset of this classroom environment that we seem to find ourselves in nowadays. I'm suggesting that if you stand your ground, you must be prepared for the consequences of a challenge to the oppressors. It can only serve your children, if you don't get fired, that is. It's a dangerous path to take, and one in which teachers I've spoken to recently are terrified of taking. If they stand up and challenge the authority, if somebody comes in with a great new initiative, even if it's an initiative that you've been doing for years, they don't hear that, they don't see that. What they often do is, if you take anything other than a complete acceptance of what they're saying, you can be seen as troublemaking, or weak in some way, or worse, not competent. And that fear of competency the fear of being judged somehow less than adequate, and the consequence that that has for any prospect of you finding a job in another school because of the risk it places, the reference that you need from those very same people, it can put that in your mind as a good reason not to say anything, to be smart, keep your mouth shut, keep your head down. Now, I'm quite lucky. I get to go into lots of schools and I see lots of teachers, some of which have been in jobs for very many years, longer than I've been in education. And you see several types. There are the type who are happy, engaged in their work, quite creative. They give a lot of hours, a great deal more hours than the 35 they're paid every week. And they do it because they're motivated and keen to change the lives of young children. And to be honest, if that's not your motive, then you shouldn't be a teacher anyway. There's the other ones, though, of course, who have been in the same job and have got tired and they've given up fighting the system. They'll do whatever they're asked to do. They'll follow the latest initiative. They'll include whatever it might be, sharing learning intentions, structured success criteria, new discipline policies, no discipline policies, whatever it is that you have to endure for the current newly promoted deputes initiative or for the culture of the school. It's difficult, and after a while, those people become, I don't know, shells? They become something hollow, something quite different. You see them in the school environment, and I see them as something less than 100% of a human being, because they've parked a great deal of their humanness, and they leave it at home. They don't bring it into school with them. I would far rather see a lively, engaging, interesting, passionate person who brings all of themselves into school and brings that to bear in their classroom for their children. That's the maverick, that's the exciting teacher, that's the one who takes risks. And more often than not, that's the one who finds himself crossing the system, crossing the groupthink of promoted staff, who very often don't see that with the initiatives, with this mindset, this parochial thinking that they have, that the classroom teacher is just the worker at the chalk face and has no mind or imagination of their own. Those people can become absolutely disengaged. If you challenge that thinking, of course, what you very often find is that you're labelled, you're tagged, and can be quite often persecuted. Many of us have personal experience of this, and it's not pleasant. But what are your principles? If it's for you, then it's something you should be doing in a classroom. You should be taking those risks, standing up against the latest initiative, challenging the evidence. This, I think, is what's behind Graham Donaldson's thinking about the imaginative, creative, research and evidence-informed practitioner, the person who actually stands in the classroom and says, "I'm sorry, head teacher, but your latest initiative is based upon what evidence? Before I put that in front of my children, let me see what the research evidence says is good about your new scheme." Challenge the authority, challenge the weakness, and make our schools creative, imaginative, and wonderful places to be for children. I wonder what you think of all that. I'd appreciate your comments. As always, thanks for listening.